So good afternoon, everyone. We're going to learn a little bit of extra Torah on today's snow day and take away an insight, which I think is important for everybody, as we find in Parshas Yisro. You know, every child, every person knows, I think we all know the poem that's in front of you on the source sheet, that why the Torah was given on Har Sinai. And we know that Hashem went from mountain to mountain until reaching Har Sinai, who is the most plain and the simple of mountains, right? We'll quote from everybody's famous poem, "Little Har Sinai just stood there inside. I know I'm not tall. I know I'm not wide. The Torah can't be given on me because I'm a plain mountain," he said simply. But from all the mountains, Hashem chose Sinai because he did not hold himself high. He had such simple and humble ways. And from this we learn that humbleness pays. This is a poem that we are all familiar with, probably from nursery, kindergarten, as far back as it may go. And we know that Har Sinai was chosen for the place of Kabbalah Satorah because of his humility. So I'm going to ask a question. It's true that Hashem wants to highlight the importance of humility, of anava, when it comes to growth in Torah and Kabbalah Satorah. But if Har Sinai was so special, then where would you have actually wanted to give the Torah if the message of Torah was humility? Why would you give it at all on a small mountain? Why didn't Hashem give the Torah in a valley? Way, way down below, in a deep valley, not a mountain at all, nothing to stand on. Wouldn't that have highlighted the idea, the concept of humility more than giving it on a mountain? I don't want to take anything away from Har Sinai. Har Sinai is a great place. But come on, if we want to teach about humility and being lowly and not thinking too highly of oneself, then the perfect place would have been to give the Torah in a valley, in a very, very low place, or flat on the ground, not on a hill at all. So what we want to discuss today is an attempt to explain why Har Sinai is the perfect balance of where the Torah was given, and why we should also emulate and try to become like Har Sinai in what it is. Because Har Sinai was the perfect balance between humility and not thinking too highly of oneself, but also having a little bit of self-esteem. And understanding that we have to have value and strength and courage to accomplish as well. We can't be people who have no backbones, who don't want to accomplish at all. Let's look at a pasuk. The pasuk says, Moshe Allah el Elokim, and Moshe went out to Hashem, v'yikra ilav Hashem en ahar lemor. And Hashem called out to Moshe on the mountain saying, Ko somar lebeis Yaakov, v'sagid levnei Yisrael. We all know this, right? That Hashem spoke to Beis Yaakov, and he said to speak to Bnei Yisrael. Rashi famously explains, right, that Bnei Yisrael refers to the men, and Beis Yaakov refers to who? Beis Yaakov refers to the women. That's the source of the name of Beis Yaakov, as a school for women. And this is the differentiation over here between Beis Yaakov and Bnei Yisrael. I think many of us are familiar with the parish of the Baal HaTurim on Chumash. The Baal HaTurim, who's printed in most standard Chumashim, is well known for gematrias and comparisons between meanings of words. Very, very short commentary. Now, Rav Yaakov Baal HaTurim wrote a second commentary as well that's not printed in most Chumashim, and it's called the Tur HaAruch, the longer Perish of the Tur. And there, it's more of like a Perish, where he's dealing with issues in the Psukim and trying to resolve contradictions, more like a Rashi, more like a Rashbam, something like that. So the Tur wonders why the Torah here highlights that there was a difference between the men and the women, and that the women were spoken to first. Why just not say that Hashem spoke to Bnei Yisrael? Why does it have to say Beis Yaakov and Bnei Yisrael, all the Jewish people? And why do we have the women first? Why do we have ladies first when it comes to who Moshe was instructed to talk to? So the Torah writes something beautiful. You have the source in front of you, but I'm going to say it outside. He says that there was another time when man and woman were commanded to follow instructions. Now, that's up for discussion when it took place, whether it took before Kabbalah Satorah, after Kabbalah Satorah, but at this moment, everybody agrees that this took place after the Ten Commandments, but when exactly it took place, we can discuss. And those instructions for men and women did not go to plan. So the first time men and women were given instructions was Adam and Chava. Right? Adam and Chava were told to not eat from the Eitz Hadas Tovara, And the end, Chava and Adam ate. First Chava ate and Adam ate afterwards. And therefore, at Matan Torah, when the Torah was given, women were given a warning first. They were told first by Hashem, don't mess up over here. Make sure you're going to keep the Torah. Why? Says the Torah, because Hashem wanted women to feel special and responsible by giving the first command regarding keeping the Torah and acting as a mamlechas kohanim v'goy kadosh, as a nation of priestly beings. So how did this play out? Right? Let's rewind. By Adam and Chava. Chava ate first and she made a mistake and Adam ended up eating and now we are where we are because of the sin of the Itz Hadas Tov V'Ra. So Hashem wanted to play things out differently. He saw that Adam and Chava, that mankind had fallen, they had sinned, they made a mistake. So instead of berating them and saying, guys, don't mess up again, you guys are really, really, really going to have a big problem, don't do the wrong thing, Hashem played it out differently. He raised Chava up. He raised the women up. And Hashem told them, guys, you keep the Torah, you are special. You are special people, make sure you guard the Torah properly. So what happens at the end of the day? Says the Torah, a little bit of time later, so Aaron decided to stall when Moshe had not come back down the mountain. And he asked the Jewish people to hand over their gold for the Egel HaZav, for a golden calf. And the Pirkei de Rabbi Ezra tells us, the Medrash tells us, that the women outright refused to be involved in any way with the golden calf. Their refusal went so far that the husbands had to steal and rob from their wives in order to get the necessary gold. But where did the women find this inner strength, the pressure? Most of Bnei Israel are doing the wrong thing. They want to build a golden calf. Moshe has abandoned them. What's going on over here? And the women find this inner strength, this koach, that they didn't even know they had. Where did it come from to withstand the pressure of their husbands and the men to not be involved in building the Egel HaZav? So the Torah writes that the women felt that they were given a great responsibility as bearers and leaders of the Torah. The women understood that Hashem placed them on a pedestal as being special. And therefore, when they had the opportunity to sin and to shape the Egel HaZav, they stayed far away from the men. They refused to give up any of their jewelry for the Avodah Zarah. Why, says the Torah? Because the women remembered. Do you remember when Hashem said to us, Kosomar le-Beis Yaakov, tell the women first. They need to be the first ones to know about the importance of the Torah. They need to be the first ones to connect to the Torah and understand the importance of mitzvos. Didn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu speak to us first? Doesn't that mean that the Ribono Shel Olam thinks that we are the torchbearers for Klal Yisrael? How could we participate in such a lowly, disgusting rebellion against Hashem? And that, says the Torah, is where the Jewish women found their strength from. Because Hashem showed us at that moment the importance of raising other people up. The best way to reach inside of oneself or to touch other people and to see what they're made of is to give them the right amount of responsibility. And as we're told in the comic books, with great responsibility comes great power. The idea being that if you have a person in your life or yourself and you feel that you're messing up, you're struggling, so give yourself a bit of responsibility. Instead of pushing yourself down, instead of pushing other people down, give them a little bit of extra love, a little bit of extra responsibility. Show them how great they can be. And when they have that taste of somebody valuing them and somebody raising them up, they're going to do much better going forward instead of being pushed down and being told how bad they are. Now the Orcho Sadikim writes in the Shana Ava, he says, Tifchar lechavar mishiyakar orach atzmo. Make sure you have friends who recognize your value. Umi she'eno makiras atzmo, ein tov bechamaso. He says, if you don't recognize your value, if you don't have people around you who raise you up and show you what you're capable of you being the best person you can be, then you're hanging out with the wrong crowd. I would hope that nobody here has friends or people around them who push them down, who tell them how they're mess-ups, who tell them how they can't accomplish. You need to choose friends. You need to have people around you. Not who are yes-men or yes-women who tell you everything you do is perfect and great. No, that's not what we need to grow. If we're being foolish, people need to tell us we're doing the wrong thing. But we need people who want to speak to our potential. Don't do that. You're so much better. Don't act in such a way. You're so much more talented than that. We need to have friends who see our value and raise us up, just like the women were told Kosomar LeBeis Yaakov, and they found something special with inside of them. I think we're all familiar with the Gemara in Kesubos and Daf Samech Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that there was a man named Akiva, and he was a shepherd, and he was employed by a very wealthy man in Yerushalayim named Kalba Savua. And at the age of 40, this Akiva was a total Amaretz, a total ignorant man. He knew absolutely nothing about Torah Mitzvos. But his daughter of this man, Kalba Savua, who lived on her family's estate, saw this Akiva and recognized the hidden qualities and proposed to get married to him on condition that he go and study. Now this resulted in her father disowning her and kicking her out of the house. And disowned by her father and far from Akiva, who was learning, Rachel was left to fend for herself for 24 years because she sent her husband off to learn in yeshiva by himself. Until finally her husband returned in glory and became the famous Rabbi Akiva, and he recognized his wife's role in his success, and he told his Talmidim, mine and her, yours are hers, everything I accomplish is because of her. How did Rabbi Akiva become Rabbi Akiva? Where did he get the strength to become this great leader? Because someone, his wife in this case, believed in him. His wife saw his potential, raised him up with confidence and love, and was able to see him through to be successful. That's where success comes from. You know, the Torah in Parshas Beshalach says that the Meraglim, the spies, in their report back from Eretz Yisrael said, that we were in their eyes like grasshoppers, and we were like grasshoppers in their eyes. It's a very funny expression. We were like grasshoppers in their eyes, and we were grasshoppers in their eyes. What's going on over here? So, in the Sefer Derech Sicha, Rav Eliyahu Mann explains as follows. He says that the pasuk is really expressing a reality. The Meraglim, the spies, in front of the giants who lived in Eretz Yisrael, were small and insignificant like grasshoppers in the eyes of the Knanim, because in front of these giants. Why? Because they were small and lonely in their own eyes. They didn't view themselves with any respect. They thought they were nothing. They didn't see their own responsibility, their own value. And therefore they saw themselves as small, and others saw them as small as well. If you view yourself as small and nothing, then other people will treat you the same way, without question. You know, in Parshas Metzora, the Torah tells us that when the Metzora, the person with Tzaras, goes to purify himself, he brings the wood of the mighty cedar tree, a red string, and a lowly hyssop bush. And the Metzora suffered an acute sense of haughtiness and self-absorption. He was so full of himself. And he felt he was better than everybody else, so he spoke Lashon Hara, he dragged people down with his words. But what was the purpose of bringing the cedar wood? Right? I understand why he needs the lowly hyssop bush to remind him to be more humble. But why does he need the mighty wood of the cedar tree? What's that supposed to do? And the answer is that if a person has a true sense of self-worth, and you understand that you're special, and that Hashem loves you, and you have what to offer to the world, then you'll see that your words matter, and your actions matter, and what you say matters, and you won't tear people down and destroy their lives. We need this balance. This is the balance of Har Sinai, right? Har Sinai is a mountain, but a small mountain. It's not a valley where it's deep in the ground. It's not a plain where people step all over it. It's a mountain, but it's a small mountain. And this is the balance of self-growth. Self-esteem, but also understanding where you come from. We'll just say a few words here to understand, and everyone should be encouraged to go learn more about Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, who passed away this week at the age of 90 from coronavirus. And he was living in Eretz Yisrael. When he passed away, he had retired to Eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Twersky was, besides being a great Hasidic Rebbe and a great teacher of Torah, he was one of the world's foremost experts on addiction. And he often writes, he would say that this is actually the theme of all of his books. He wrote something like 60, 70 books, a huge amount of books, that the issue in our generation, the biggest issue that people suffer from is low self-esteem. And that most people's problems in life, personal problems in life, could be solved if we worked on our sense of self-esteem and a better sense of who we are. I encourage everybody to go and read one of Rabbi Twersky's books. His books are accessible. They're easy to understand in comfortable English. People should go and learn from him and about him because he was such an important teacher of this idea of this balance between self-esteem and self-worth and not thinking too lowly of yourself. I want to tell the following story. Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, the first Rebbe of Chabad, was raising money to ransom Jewish prisoners. And he went first to a city that was famous for a miserly man who refused to give any charity. And it seems that this stingy man, despite his considerable wealth, was loath to share his blessings no matter how worthy or urgent the cause. Rabbis and beggars alike avoided his home because he was so nasty to people when they came to ask for money. And anyone who did go to his house and ended up at his doorstep was given a single rusty penny, a rusty copper coin, that was it, which even the most desperate pauper and desperate poor person would refuse. So Rav Shneur Zalman came to the town, and the leaders of the community came to meet him. But when he announced that he wanted to go visit the house of this miser, and he wanted two rabbis to come with him, nobody wanted to come, because they were afraid of how embarrassing it would be that they're going to treat this great tzaddik, this great teacher of Torah, in such a disgusting way. They didn't want to stand there. But Rav Shneur Zalman was adamant, and they agreed to send two people to escort him on the way to the house. So the next afternoon, the three rabbis went, and they stood in front of the mansion of this miser. And before knocking on the door, Rav Shneur Zalman turned to the two rabbis with him, and he told them, "Don't say a word. No matter what you see, no matter what you hear, keep quiet." So, a few minutes later, they're brought inside. They're standing in this, amazing opening room, hallway of the house. And the owner came back from his safe with a small velvet pouch. And he said, "Yes," the man said. "It's a very touching story. People in need, widows and orphans in captivity. Ah, tzaros for Klal Yisrael. People are suffering. Here, take my donation." And he hands it in the little bag with the rusty penny. So Rav Shneur Zalman took the gift and he smiled. And he said, "Thank you so much." He said, "Thank you. Hashem should bless you. Hashem should bless your house. Have a wonderful day." And he proceeded to write out a receipt for the charity that he gave. He gave this much tzedakah and all types of beautiful brachos he wrote on the receipt to give the man. And he said, "Thank you so much, my friend." And he shook his hand and he turned away. And he turned to the two rabbis with him and he said, "We should be on our way. We have a lot of collecting to do. Let's go." So the three rabbis walked to the door. The two rabbis on the side of Rav Shneur Zalman, their mouths are open wide. They don't know what to do. They're so embarrassed. They're so confused about what's going on. And as they leave the door place, the entrance, the door of the man's house, so the man turned to him and said, "Where are you going? Stop. Don't go anywhere. Please come back in for a minute. I have to speak to you. Please come back in." So a few minutes later, they're sitting in his office, a nice couch, a nice place to sit, and the man is walking back and forth very restlessly, and he stops for a moment and he turns to Rav Shneur Zalman and says, "How much do you need to pay to get these prisoners out?" So Rav Shneur Zalman said, "We need 5,000 rubles. So the man said, "Here's 1,000. I'll give you 1,000 rubles. You can count it. Here's the money," and he gave it to the Rebbe. So the other rabbis, their mouths went even further open. This guy hasn't given more than a penny for 20 years, and now all of a sudden he gave $1,000 to Rav Shneur Zalman. And they stared at the money, and they were afraid to look at him. Maybe the guy's going to change his mind. Maybe he's going crazy. So the Rebbe shook the man's hand. He thanked him. He wrote him another receipt with more brachos and praises, and the rabbis are whispering themselves, "It's a miracle. They can't believe it." They walked out of the house down to the gate of the property. And as they're about to leave the property, they hear the man screaming from the steps, "Rabbi, Rabbi, please come back. I changed my mind. Please come back one more time. I have to talk to you." They come back inside his house again. And he said, "I decided to give you all of the money you need for the ransom. All 5,000 rubles." So they take the money again. He thanks them, thanks the man, and he walks out of the house. And as they're walking down, the two other rabbis turn to Rav Shneur Zalman and they say, "How did you get this miser to give 5,000 rubles? That's nuts." And Rav Shneur Zalman said, "This man is not a miser. No Jewish neshama doesn't want to give tzedakah. But how could he have a desire to give if he was called and treated as a miser his entire life? His whole life, people told him, You're good for nothing. You don't give enough. You don't give proper tzedakah. You're not nice to people. And what happened? He came to believe it about himself. And he had a self-fulfilling prophecy where he was a miser. He was a nasty person. He didn't want to give tzedakah. And this, he says, is how we get out of it. You see somebody behaving badly, don't push them down and talk about their terrible behavior. Focus on what's good about them. Raise them up like a little Har Sinai. Give them a bit of confidence and make them feel better. Kosomar Lebeis Yaakov. Putting people in a place of success is much better than belittling and putting them down. You know, Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, who was the late Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir, once asked a certain Talmud, a student of his, to take a job in a yeshiva. Now, this young man had been in America earlier, learning in the yeshiva of Torah Vadas in Brooklyn with the great tzaddik Rav Avraham Palm. And Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel called Rav Palm and asked Rav Palm to recommend this young man for the position. Now, Rav Palm felt that this student of his was young, not ready, not responsible enough for this type of job. And he told Rav Nosson Tzvi Finkel, I just don't think he's ready for it. So Rav Nosson Tzvi called Rav Palm and he said, in Yiddish, he said, Mit achrayas kumt de kochos. He says, if a person has a bit of responsibility, a bit of achrayas, you'll have the strength. And Rav Palm was very struck by that statement, and he would repeat it often to others as well. If you give somebody a little bit of responsibility, you raise them up, you make them feel good about themselves. Maybe you have a friend who you feel, yeah, I don't want to give them that job. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it. We're working on a project together. You know, they're probably going to drop the ball. They're not going to get it done. No. Give them a bit of responsibility. Let them raise themselves up. And if they have the chance to be responsible, they'll be able to do it at the end of the day. Right, Pesach Krohn, in his book, Illuminations of the Maggid, he speaks about this idea a little bit. He has a beautiful idea from Rav Yerucham Levavitz, the famed Mashgiach of the Mir, who would say it is important for a person to know his faults so he knows what he must change. But it's even more important for him to know his virtues and strengths so he knows how much he can accomplish. We have to know what we're capable of, that we're capable of amazing things. It brings a beautiful idea from Rav Yitzhak Huttner, that Adam is the letters Ma'od. The word Adam, mankind, is the same letters as Ma'od, Mem Aleph Dalet. Why? Because Adam needs to know that he's unlimited, he has so much to accomplish, there's a lot we can do. Rabbi Krohn tells a story about himself, that many years ago he was working at his desk at home, and his two-year-old son was riding his bike from the living room through the office, and every single time he would ride his bike around the corner, his yarmulke would fall off. And he kept on writing, and the yarmulke would fall off, and the father would remind him again, the Rabbi Krohn would remind his son again, you know, put your yarmulke on. And it fell off too many times. One time he was out of his yarmulke too many times, and Rabbi Krohn jumped up and he said, "You're such a..." And he was about to say something about his son. And he caught himself. And he thought to himself, don't say anything you're going to regret later on. And he said, "You're such a tzaddik. How could you let your yarmulke fall off and not put it back on your head right away?" And Rabbi Krohn was so thankful that he caught himself and was able to say the right thing. And, you know, Baruch Hashem, the boy grew up and he became, you know, a Talmid Chacham, and he's very proud of his son. But that's the difference, right? Before you spit out to somebody and say, "You're such a..." Think about the positive things you can say to raise them up. They could feel better about themselves, they could accomplish, and they could be, you know, their own little Har Sinai. They could be a place of accomplishment. They can fulfill the mandate of the tour of Kosomar Lebeis Yaakov to have that sense of pride, that sense of accomplishment, that sense of responsibility, and we should all be able to make ourselves and those people we come across, you know, Mirza Hashem, our children in the future, our family, our friends, those who come across us, to raise them up, to make them into better people, and to make them into little Har Sinais, and to teach them the lesson of Kosomar Lebeis Yaakov. Okay.